gals, and everything in between. Welcome back to My Consumerist Week. I am Tyler Mitchell, and sitting to my immediate left, as always, is my good friend Tyler Berry.
Drop top, skirt, skirt.
Wow. I never know what he's going to say, but he always manages to exceed my expectations.
It's what I do.
For those of you who are just joining us, this podcast is a casual reflection of our pop culture consumption over the past 7 days or so. On this episode, we are going to start things off with a discussion about Dunkirk, the recently released World War II film from Christopher Nolan, and then we'll dive into the different media and content we've consumed recently. And as always, spoiler alert, we are going to spoil Dunkirk. So if you haven't seen it, skip forward or pause it and go see it and then come back.
Yep.
We'll wait for you.
That was us waiting.
Welcome back. So let's just go ahead and dive in about Dunkirk. How did you feel about Dunkirk?
Okay. Well, excuse the... What is that? A leaf blower? Outside? I don't know.
A leaf blower or a lawnmower or some type of greenery?
Shrubbery cutting instrument?
Sure.
So Dunkirk was a mixed bag for me simply because of the experience of us actually seeing it in a digital IMAX theater. I had a lot of problems with the sound mixing, and it took me out of it anytime there was dialogue, which...
There's not much.
Luckily, there wasn't much, but there was some stuff that... Man, it was just... The dialogue track was mixed really poorly, and I don't know if it was just the theater we were in, because I haven't really... I poked around yesterday at reviews, and I didn't really hear... Or didn't really read anyone saying that they had an issue with it, but there were times where it was just, like, the dialogue was so, like, so much on the low end and, like, so bassy to the point of almost, like, being distorted, and it just, it really irked me.
This is the same problem that Nolan had with Interstellar, although, from what I can gather from what I've read, the Interstellar problem was way worse, and that a ton of people were like, the sound mixing is just straight up bad. I haven't seen that too much for this movie, but it is part of his... It feels like that's part of his aesthetic. In a lot of his movies, the dialogue is quiet. Like, you have to turn it up... Like, when you're watching The Dark Knight, or you're watching Inception, or you're watching The Prestige, because I own all those on Blu-ray, if you watch them at home, the dialogue track is so quiet that you turn it up, and then the music and the sound is just blaring.
Right.
Like, he likes... the dichotomy of quiet and then really loud everything else. So I don't know if that's part of what he's trying to do, but you're right, because we saw this together, and sitting there were times, especially with Tom Hardy, which is funny because of Bane, where it was hard to understand what he was saying. And for a while, I was attributing it to his accent, but I just don't think it was that. Because everyone else, like, totally understood everything they were... For the most part, everything they were saying.
Yeah.
There were a couple Harry Styles lines where I lost what he was saying in the sound mixing, but the real problem, I think, was Tom Hardy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It was really everything in the air, and I get changing up how the sound of that dialogue sounds because it's taking place in the air across 1940s radio waves in fighter planes, so I understand it's not gonna, like, come off, you're not gonna make it come off quite as clear as two people, like Kenneth Branagh's commander character and someone talking on the mole at another point in the movie, but I don't understand aesthetically making it that hard to understand some of the only dialogue in this movie.
And interestingly enough, they kind of get away with it a little bit with Tom Hardy's character because the dogfighting scenes and all of the stuff that takes place in the air with the Air Force is the stuff where you need the least dialogue because there's not much for them to do except for shoot other planes. So it's not really that debilitating, but it is frustrating. I do think it's interesting, since we just saw War for the Planet of the Apes last week, that the last two big-budget Hollywood films we've seen have such little emphasis on dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, both of these movies are, I mean, if we took a look at their screenplay, I want to know, compared to the average Hollywood movie, what the number of dialogue lines are compared to those.
I read something before we started that, I don't know if this was the final draft, but at least a major draft of this movie that the studio got was only 76 pages long, which is half of what a normal Christopher Nolan movie is. On the low end, it's half.
Well, yeah, and this, we need to say, this is the shortest Christopher Nolan movie. It's an hour and 46 minutes long. Does not feel like an hour and 46 minutes. It feels as long as most other Chris Nolan movies. At least it did to me. It feels long. It feels longer than an hour and 46 minutes.
It did to me, but I think only because I was having such frustrations understanding some of the dialogue. I think as a movie, it was paced really well. Like, the cutting back between three different perspectives throughout the film, I think kept it moving.
See,
better
this
than...
This is where we disagree.
Okay.
I found the pacing to be extremely problematic. And I usually love his pacing style. I love his intercutting and his messing with sequences and stuff. For this movie, it was jarring and it didn't... He's trying to artificially increase the tension by switching around the sequence of events. And it doesn't work. The film would have been just as impactful if everything happened in sequential order. But it didn't. And it made it feel longer because we're just jumping around.
That's interesting. Because for me, it didn't make it feel longer. I would say, you know, he does what's called a triptych, which is the process of telling a story in from three different staggered perspectives. I would argue that it frankly just made the movie problematic to follow as far as a timeline goes. In the early goings of the film, I'd say like the first 30 to 40 minutes, I was kind of struggling with following the timeline of like when everything was happening. And I think part of that actually comes from the way each sequence is first introduced with the text on screen. Because it basically, each sequence, the mole, the sea, and the air, they're all set up by numbered text that comes up on the screen. So like the first sequence, the mole, comes up, it says, number one, the mole, underlined, and then under it, it says 1 week, the sea, two, 1 day, and then the air, three, 1 hour. And it took me almost half the movie to understand why that text was there and what that actually meant. Maybe that was just completely me, but like it just felt like a really ambiguous way to start each sequence off. Like it just didn't quite, I don't think it quite captured what it was trying to do from that storytelling
perspective. One of the hallmarks of Christopher Nolan film, and it's something I applaud him for usually, is ambiguity. And he respects his audience's intelligence to figure things out, which is something I usually love about his movies. And as much as I thought the cinematography was amazing and Hans Zimmer's score was pushing everything forward, and I think all the acting was pretty great. Like,
I was really impressed with Harry Styles.
I know, me too. I was Harry
really
Styles
impressed.
Was not distracting. He was actually
great.
Doing a good job
yeah.
at acting. Fionn Whitehead is the main character. Tommy was really good.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the middle of this film just dragged on forever and ever.
So where are you estimating that from? Are we talking like from the time Tommy and Harry Styles' character actually get on that ship that ends up sinking? Is that kind of where you're going from all the way through the sequence where they...
From the moment where Tommy and, spoiler, the French guy, who you're not supposed to know is French, are grabbing the wounded guy to try and get on the boat back to England, up until the ending sequence of events where everything sort of wraps up, that felt so long. It was not working for me. But I have to say, the opening scene where Tommy and his platoon are sort of walking through France was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was great. The opening of this movie is fantastic, and I love the ending, too. Like, the ending with everything, Tom Hardy surrendering while the plane is burning and all that stuff. Even something as is my least favorite part about this film was the whole bit where George died because he fell down some stairs. It felt rushed and unearned and like, okay, that happened. And then we're just supposed to accept it.
Yeah,
it didn't work for me.
That was kind of weird, especially...
I mean, I literally in the theater was like, okay, great. He died. Cool. He's a casualty of war, I guess. When actual people are dying all the time around us in this movie, and then I'm supposed to care about this kid because he fell down some stairs.
The newspaper thing bothered me, too.
See, that got to me, though.
Really?
And I didn't like the whole through line with George, but then when Peter gets him in the paper like he always wanted to be, like, it's the local paper, and the local paper for them is like, has a circulation of hundreds of people, maybe, so it's like, it resonates. It's like if you were in the Fisher's paper that... Fishers, Indiana, where no one lives. Like, that's what it's kind of felt like to me.
Yeah, it summed up a whole sequence of that movie that just felt unearned. Yep. Maybe that's why it just didn't really resonate.
I mean, I like the George character because he didn't have to go with them and he wanted to go and help out and all that stuff. The revelation that Mark Rylance's character had a son who died in the war and he still came out to save people was it. I was like, oh man, that hit me in the heartstrings a little bit. That was the moments for the most part where you're supposed to feel, I don't know, heartbroken and stuff like that. They really come through. My main issue with this film outside of the weird sound editing is just I feel like the middle of the movie is really muddled.
And I think the back half of this film, as far as the pacing, like from intercutting between three different perspectives, gets a lot less muddled for me. The first half, as great as individual scenes were, like I said, maybe this is just me, and if so, then that's on me. But I just didn't quite pick up on the timeline right away, and I felt like I felt like the second half just did a lot better did a lot better job of making you understand like where each set of characters was in sequence to one another, and then when it all culminates like at the end together, I think it ends up working really, really well. I think the payoff of the ship's heading back to Britain, and Tom Hardy's flying partner ending up on Mark Rylance's boat, and then them seeing Tom Hardy's plane fly over Dunkirk and shoot down the German fighter jet before it lands outside of the Allied border. I think the payoff for telling that story that way was great.
I like the end of the movie a lot.
Yeah. I don't
know how to fix the middle of the movie. Maybe more dialogue. I mean, there is such little dialogue, and the dialogue you get isn't really that impactful either, except for the end of it.
I will say one of the scenes I loved the most, especially in that second act, area around there, was when Tommy, Harry Styles' character, and the French character, those three and a bunch of the other guys who had jumped off that ship that was sinking, that got hit by that torpedo, were all in, shell of... What was that they were in? Like the shell of like a sub
just,
or something?
No, it was just a beached boat.
It was just a beached boat. I mean, and the Germans were having target practice, and like they were all trying to stay quiet while also plugging up holes that were sending water into the boat. I thought that scene was, like, the tension from that scene was great.
That scene would have worked better for me if we weren't intercutting it with other things.
If it was just one long,
yeah,
one long shot.
Because like it start the tension's ratcheting up, and then we cut to something else. And
cut,
I'm like,
cut back to the
no,
boat. Yeah, yeah.
I want to see what's happening here, and then we come back. I'm like, oh yeah, this again. And then we cut back away from it again, and I'm like, no, this is where the act. I get you're trying to extend the tension. That's the whole point of the movie. And Hans Zimmer's score, from the beginning to the end, it increases it. Like, there are little ticks, like time, kind of like he does in Inception.
Mm-hmm.
And they get faster and faster as the movie goes on. And it's this sort of subconscious ticking of the clock that keeps moving forward. I understand what he's trying to do. It just does not work for me, personally. And I'm kind of amazed at the reviews this movie's gotten. Like, universal acclaim, 94% on Metacritic. Out of 251 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, it's 92% fresh, with an average rating of 8.6 out of 10. And I'm not saying that this movie isn't good. I think it's a good movie. The middle drags a lot for me. But this thing is... it might be his most acclaimed film. Which is kind of crazy thinking about it, because he's had some really popular and really well-reviewed films. I mean, The
mm-hmm.
Dark Knight and Inception.
I mean, Interstellar was still pretty well-reviewed.
It was
received,
not like
right?
this.
Not like, no, not like this, but...
So, I don't know. I'm happy I saw it.
Yeah.
I probably will never watch it again. It's one of the first Christopher Nolan movies. Well, okay. This and Dark Knight Rises,
yeah,
for me, are the two... I mean, I can watch Interstellar, I can watch Inception, I can watch Memento, I can watch Batman Begins, I can watch The Prestige over and over and over and over.
Right.
This is not that. And that has nothing to do with it being a World War II movie or a true story. I mean, I've watched The Imitation Game 4 times. That's a true story film about World War II.
Mm-hmm.
This one just, it doesn't capture me that way.
Yeah.
And especially... the cinematography is great, and the
yeah.
dogfighting scenes are great, and the realistic nature of the war scenes is great. But, I mean, we just saw it in IMAX, so watching it at home will pale in comparison. And this is a movie that you should probably see in theaters to get all of that stuff.
I think
assuming
so too.
The sound mixing is different and not an IMAX theater.
Yeah.
I mean, this...
this was also, like... this is also a really new... digital IMAX that we saw
True.
It at. So, I mean, there could be calibration issues with the speakers that they're still trying to figure out.
Well,
or just,
this is, it's the same
I don't
thing
know.
That
I,
happens where for a long time when 3D movies were the big thing, and they would show 3D films in the same theater as non-3D films, and they would leave the 3D lens on the camera so that when you were watching a 2D film, it was being filtered again through a 3D lens, and the film was darker.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. It could be something's wrong with the theater we're seeing it in. Maybe the sound mixing isn't horrible. And
yeah.
We just had a bad experience. That could be true. And maybe that would change my opinion of the film, but the sound mixing wasn't as debilitating. I mean, I remember being in the theater in Interstellar and being like, I cannot understand anything he's saying right now. And with Tom Hardy's character, I could sort of make out what was supposed to be being said. I like Interstellar much better when I watch it on my Blu-ray at home.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could actually... It was... as bad as the sound mixing was, the theater sound amplified that for me. And maybe that's true about Dunkirk. Maybe if we watched it again in a different theater, it would be different.
But I did walk out of that movie thinking to myself, you know, people don't put as much stock in some of the, like lower... quote-unquote lower-tier awards during award season, but, man, when you
that's
watch a poorly sound-mixed movie, whether it's the movie itself or the speakers you're listening to it on, it certainly affects your experience whether you think it's going to or not. At least it did for me, and I think you a little bit, too. Maybe not as much as me, but definitely.
No, it's something that I obviously notice. I mean, having done my own student films... I've spent hours working on sound mixing and sound editing and sound tracking and stuff like that. It's something that I'm very readily aware of whenever I watch a movie. And I was trying to let it slide, to just enjoy the film.
And it's a little bit easier to do so when there is such little dialogue. Like, good Lord, could you imagine if we had watched, like...
a Tarantino movie?
Or a
Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin-helmed movie? Like, that would have... I probably wouldn't have been able to finish it. But, I mean, overall, yeah, I really, I like this movie a lot. I have to say I'm probably with you. I can't imagine myself maybe once more, like, once renting this movie and watching it, but it's certainly not going
to
be in my collection.
Garner any Academy Award nominations? What do you think?
I think it'll be nominated. I think it'll be in the conversation for cinematography.
Probably. I mean...
Oh, can we talk about real quick, and this is probably an unpopular opinion because of how popular he is, but I guess I just didn't get why Tom Hardy
was in it.
In it.
Because, I mean, this is a famous thing that happened in World War II for Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
So it has this sort of prestige about it. And, I mean... If we're being honest, why is Harry Styles in it? Why is any actor, I mean, except for maybe Mark Rylance and all the young guys who you don't know who they are, why is Kenneth Branagh in this? Like,
see, but all those characters, at least you see their faces for more than 20 collective seconds in this movie. You know what I mean? Like,
I get what you're saying.
And I love Tom Hardy. Like, when I first saw the first trailer of this had a clip of him in the plane, and I was like, oh, cool. I can't wait to see Tom Hardy in this. But then there really just wasn't really a need for him. And also, mm-hmm. he had the most, like, muffled, distorted dialogue of the film. So it's like, it's not like he really had to flex his really good acting chops throughout this film. So I don't know. I guess I didn't have a problem with him being in it, but I just didn't really get why.
So I'm looking at... This is my second thing for Oscar predictions, and I think maybe we had a bad theater.
Okay.
For sound, because I'm looking at the nominations that are projected in. Dunkirk is supposed to be nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, no actings, Best Original Screenplay. I mean, I guess.
Sure.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Best Production Design might win, because, I mean, when they're in France, like in the city of Dunkirk, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous. Best cinematography, that seems like a definite.
Right.
Best film editing, that's something I disagree with. It is edited very well from a technical standpoint, but I just don't agree with most of the choices there. Here you go. It's slated to get nominated for Best Sound Mixing and Best Sound Editing.
Okay. Well, then I'm hoping that, I guess then maybe it was just our theater.
Yeah. And also Best Original Score.
I'd like to go see another movie in that theater that we saw it in to see if there are similar issues.
Yeah.
But
that's all I've got. So
yeah, that's all I've got. I strongly recommend seeing it in theaters if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it already.
It is.
It's a theater.
It is not the best movie I've seen this year by any stretch, but it's an enjoyable film.
Cool, cool.
You want to talk about more movies and TV?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
I haven't really watched another movie in the past week. I watched Louis C.K. Live at the Comedy Store special, which is the only one of his that I had not seen, and it's not my favorite special that he's ever done.
What year was that?
2005, I think,
okay.
Or 4.
I think I saw that a long time ago.
It just is not, the bits aren't my favorite. So, I don't know. It is what it is. It's 2015.
All right.
There's a good bit about, I think my favorite thing in it is about him growing up in Boston and in the 70s where he's like, I had a teacher who, he goes, Boston is basically a city of people pronouncing everything just wrong, which means my teacher was pronouncing everything and teaching us wrong. Like, her name was Mrs. Doherty, but she said it Mrs. Doherty. She was teaching us phonics incorrectly. I mean, he goes on and on and on about it. The whole thing was that he used to think when he was in fifth grade that a vagina was called a virginer because that's the way she would pronounce it when, during his sexual education that everyone gets in fifth and sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, this here is a vaginer. And he's like, I always thought a vagina was something that vagines. And he's like, you know, back in the 70s, everything was politically incorrect. So she'd be like, my daughter is retarded. Like, just stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was funny because accents are funny. But, I mean, that's the only, I guess you can't call that a movie. It's more of a comedy special.
Yeah. And now that I'm thinking about it, I mean, I don't think I watched a movie, another movie this week either, simply because I had to write 20,000 plus words for work this week. So everything that I did was television related that I somewhat paid attention to.
Well, yeah, let's get into TV and YouTube and podcasts and stuff. So this past week, this is something I'd always wanted to watch because I heard it was good, terrible, like they're being bad on purpose sort of thing. Mm. Soap opera-y and playing on that is Revenge.
Oh, okay.
Also known as Revan 80, because the G is in...
It's a...
What is that called? Infinity?
The Infinity symbol? The
Infinity symbol. It looks like an 8, so I always called it Revan 80.
Revan 80. I like it.
It's, like, awful on purpose, and there's really bad CGI, and, like, there's bad actors in it overacting. It's, like, really campy and vampy and stuff. And I'm only 5 or 6 episodes in, but it's just dumb fun is what it is. It's, like, a perfect summer show where it's just... stupid.
I have recollections of my ex watching this in our house, and like I would walk in and just like look at it for a minute and be like, holy fuck, this is literally lit like a soap opera.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Am I remembering
that right?
They're
doing a soap opera
okay,
thing.
Yeah.
Like, there are really dumb plot lines. I mean, her whole thing is Emily Van Camp, her dad gets framed for this huge corporate espionage and murder of all these people. And she gets put in an institution when she's, like, 8 or 9 or something.
Mm-hmm.
She's a kid. And eventually she gets out, and her dad's fortune gets passed on to her, and she changes her identity to get back at everyone who set him up. So she's just, every episode is going through someone who wronged her family in the past and just getting revenge on them.
It's like a long, long, long Count of Monte Cristo.
It's like Count of Monte Cristo, basically. And
which I love. One, I love that book, so that kind of makes me want to watch this. I didn't quite know the whole setup of it, but
this show is, they're doing the soap opera thing on purpose. There are multiple moments where it's just like, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They know what they're doing. They're not trying to be award-winning. They're not trying to make anything new. They are doing one of these shows, and I enjoy it for the stupidity that it is. It's pretty fun.
Cool.
Let's see it. I guess I watched Game of Thrones. We watched Game of Thrones episode 2 of season 7 last night. I don't know what else to say about that.
Yeah, like I said last week, you can talk about it if you want. It's not going to bother me.
I think it was slower than the season opener. But, I mean, I don't want to really get into plot details. There's some, I mean, it's Game of Thrones. There are a million plot details
sure.
in every episode. That's bad.
I watched the majority of season 5 throughout the week while I worked, and that's a thing.
A slog.
It's a slog, man. I just...
you gotta catch up.
I know. I don't know. I know. My schedule's a little bit lighter this week, so I'm gonna watch episode 9 and 10 and then jump into season 6 and try with the goal of being caught up by next week, but...
Who knows?
I don't know. If other work pops up, then that'll have to take a back seat. The one show that I did watch all the way through with, like, laser focus on was the first season of HBO's Insecure.
Oh, yeah.
With Issa Rae.
I've heard really good things
about
it.
Wow, man. It is so good.
It's on the docket. I have so many shows I need to watch. It's never going to happen.
It's so well written because she's great, and also her co-creator is Larry Wilmore,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome.
I like Larry Wilmore.
I love that man. I'm glad that I didn't realize that he was a co-creator on that, and then
yeah.
I saw his name in the credits. So I was like, great. Because it was a travesty that his show got canceled.
See, I'm not of that opinion. I think he has an important voice that needs to be heard. I don't think his Comedy Central show was the right avenue for him. It just didn't click with me.
Okay.
But I am happy that he still gets to work and gets to executive produce shows. And he's writing and doing other things, at least. He was on, a couple months ago, he was on Bill Maher's show. As a guest,
mm-hmm.
He had some good political commentary on there. So good for Larry Wilmore. I like
yeah.
him a lot.
And good for Issa Rae. I mean, this
Issa album.
Yeah. Yeah, Issa Albin, 21 Savage. That's not my dude at all. I don't like 21 Savage. Anyway, no, I'm just this show was a really refreshing change for HBO, a network that's notoriously not diverse when it comes to its main characters.
Depending on the show. I mean, look at something like The Wire and Treme, like,
okay.
Two of the best shows in HBO's history.
Yeah, but those are also both, what, a decade old at this point? Like, think about the past...
Treme ended 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Okay, well, I mean... And you have Ballers with the Rock, so I mean,
one of my dad's favorite shows.
I like Ballers a lot, but I mean, the majority of HBO shows, you know, Togetherness, Divorce.
I don't talk about Divorce. That show doesn't exist.
Vice Principals.
Detective, Westworld.
Yeah.
Boardwalk Empire.
Silicon
Girls.
Silicon Valley is a little bit better, but still, I mean, it's still. It's a pretty, I hesitate to use this term, but it's kind of a whitewashed network in a lot of ways.
I don't think it's any
not,
more whitewashed
and not,
than any other channel.
I'm not saying that it is. I'm just saying that there's not enough. Okay, let's put it this way. There's just not enough people of color-centric shows on that network. And I don't think...
There is no network that has... I mean, unless we're talking about BET...
I mean, I think some of the actual networks are getting better, like the normal networks.
I
ABC
would be
is certainly getting
to
better.
To see a ratio comparison between all the networks on TV.
Actually, I would too.
Because I feel like, I mean, if you take into account documentaries and films that HBO does, saying that they aren't diverse enough, which I also agree with, they're not. I don't think they're any further behind than any other network. And in a lot of ways, they do put on shows and miniseries. I mean, The Night Of.
Yeah.
They put on things that other channels won't. A lot of this stems from the Confederate.
Oh yeah.
Discussion.
I'm glad you're bringing that up.
I don't know if we really need to talk about it.
We don't need to get. Really,
because
it
hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Everyone's freaking out about something that hasn't happened yet. Can we wait at least until the upfronts, like, or a script comes out? I mean, Jesus Christ, people. There are actual things to be frustrated with that are happening in society. Confederate is not one yet. Not yet.
Well, considering we're probably, what, at least 2 years away from pre-pro even?
Like,
because they're not even going to start
it
until Game of Thrones is over? Yeah, and... You know, we texted back and forth about it, and I was like, you know, this doesn't make me mad. Frankly, I don't think it's a very good idea.
It's not original.
It just feels like Man in the High Castle, but slave owners instead of Nazis. That's
what
it feels like to me.
And there are lots of reasons to dislike treatment of race and women in Game of Thrones, and I understand those.
Yep.
But in Game of Thrones, it at least feels period appropriate because it's supposed to be on the Middle Ages. That's an argument we can have. But I like Game of Thrones a lot for all of its warts and all of its flaws. I do enjoy watching it, so I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt at least until the upfronts come out.
Yeah.
Like, the show isn't going to... They said that they're not even going to begin production on it until early 2019, like, at the earliest. That's a year and a half. They haven't even started pre-pro yet. Like, can we, like...
We don't even know who's
frustrating
gonna, we
to
don't,
me.
And you'd have to think... And I'm taking this from, you know, the setup for Man in the High Castle, but you'd have to think one of the... At least one, and hopefully many more than one, of the main characters of that show would be a strong black character.
So of the five people announced on the writing staff, two of them are black and three of them are women.
Yeah.
Like,
so I mean,
guys, calm down. They're not just going to be in...
People kept coming out being like, it's just going to be white people telling a story of how more white people prosper.
And I think the funniest thing I've seen is that both... Black people and white people were like, well, white supremacists are just going to be utilizing this show as a seed. Look at this and this and this. And you're going to see Confederate flags on advertisements everywhere. And it's just going to reinvigorate all of that stuff. And I just want to, I feel like I need to sit these people down. And guys,
yeah,
it's a show.
It's just TV.
Two, racists are always going to exist. Let them be racists and move on. And I've been reading all these articles on things like the National Review and Red State about how the First Amendment, the freedom of speech, is under attack in this country. Like hate speech, laws, blah, blah, blah. We should be allowed to say whatever we want, blah, blah, blah. And I am a big proponent of free speech. I think we should be allowed to say what we want, because let the racists and the bigots come out and say that they're racists and bigots so I can ignore them. Let them be stupid. Let the Westboro Baptist Church
picket Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah, like, just do whatever the hell they're going to do. We are founded on free speech. That is something that this country is based on. And if we don't have free speech for everyone, then that's going to set a precedence where we don't have free speech for anyone.
But also, at the same time, with that, if you exercise that right and say some shit on social media, and your boss finds out, and he fires you, sorry about you. They've got every right to do that.
Yeah. So
just like you got every right to say what you want, but they've got every right to kick you to the curb based on that. Anyway, check out Insecure. Season 2 just premiered, I think, right after Game of Thrones last night, which is a weird... Game of Thrones is a weird lead-in for that show, but that's awesome.
Game of Thrones led into Silicon Valley for years, which was also really weird.
Yeah, that's true, until Silicon Valley switched their schedule. But yeah, I like Insecure a lot. I'm sure I'll be talking about the first couple episodes of Season 2 next week. It's a quick watch. It's 8 30-minute episodes. Yeah, check it out.
You got any other shows?
I've got some YouTube stuff, yeah.
Well, since Comic-Con was this past weekend, let's go ahead and talk about some of the trailers that were released.
Sure.
I was pleasantly surprised with the 4-minute-long Justice League teaser.
That looked good.
And I don't know how much reshooting they've done. I've been trying to stay away from a lot of the news. It feels more Joss Whedon-y than Zack Snyder-y. But the action's obviously going to end up being Zack Snyder action, because
that's the majority of what they shot before he took his leave.
Right. But if the dialogue and the reshoots gets into Joss Whedon back and forth banter stuff, then that is exciting.
I really dig that moment with Aquaman when he jumps on the Batmobile. He just goes, woo! That felt like a Joss Whedon thing to do. And you saw that it came out, he's going to get like an actual co-director credit. So clearly there was a lot of work that he did
final edit of the film, and they did a lot of reshoots. So.
Yeah, I think Zack Snyder understandably handed all of that over.
I feel really bad.
Just
about
awful. Zack Snyder. Awful.
Stranger Things
looked great.
The trailer was cut to Michael Jackson's Thriller, which is exciting for me.
I got a real almost like old school Frank Darabont vibe.
Yeah.
From it, especially when you kind of see that whatever the big monster ends up being kind of
in the distance.
It looks awesome. Way darker than season 1.
Stranger Things was one of my big surprises of last year, because I waited until October to watch. Everyone I know watched it when it came out. Like, you need to watch this. And I was like, you guys are really building this up, and I feel like I'm not going to like it.
Yeah.
As much as everyone else. And then I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, it's
Stranger
fantastic.
Things is great. If you haven't watched Stranger Things, you need to watch Stranger Things.
Yep.
They released the official trailer for Thor Ragnarok.
Looked great.
Looks fantastic. Looks great. We talked about this yesterday. I really like that Marvel is embracing color in their movies, which has been the biggest issue with the DC Extended Universe, is that
it's
Man
just,
of Steel,
it's drab. Even
Batman
Wonder Woman,
versus Superman, even Wonder Woman.
As much as I loved Wonder Woman, and I did.
Especially Suicide Squad. As much color, quote-unquote, was in that movie, which, I mean, Suicide Squad is the worst DCEU movie. And if people disagree with me, come fight me. That movie is garbage. And as much as I like Margot Robbie in it, and as much as I like even Will Smith in it, God, that movie is a train wreck. A train wreck.
they're bad guys. Let's just say it 30 more times throughout this film.
It's what we do.
It's what we do.
Anyways. God. There was one more trailer.
Oh, wait. I just wanted to mention how we get our first glimpse of, like, the actual Hulk dialogue.
It's good.
He sounds great.
It's good.
And it's funny
the
also.
The Thor Ragnarok trailer is really good.
I was pleasantly surprised with how they seem to be, like, it still has Mark Ruffalo's, like, cadence and everything.
Right.
Without being, like, too much on the Mark Ruffalo side, but also without being too much on, like, I thought they were going to have a much more, like, monster-y vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sounds like sort of a gruff, somewhat distorted human talking, which is really what it is in the end.
I mean, Mark Ruffalo was talking about the dialogue and how he's sort of like a child. He talks like how a rudimentary child would talk, I guess.
Yeah.
They released a new Defenders trailer.
Oh, yeah.
The Netflix series.
I didn't watch it.
I'm
cautiously
I think it looks
optimistic.
Good. And I haven't watched Iron Fist, and I never finished Luke Cage, and I'll probably at least finish Luke Cage. I don't know if I'll be able to
finish Luke Cage.
Iron Fist.
Did you see they switched showrunners for Iron Fist Season 2?
Good.
And everyone's, like, good?
We watched the Ready Player One trailer. And
I'm intrigued a little bit.
Okay, so we've talked about this.
It's nostalgia.
Yeah, it's... You said it's nostalgia SEO.
Yeah, it's film SEO. Search engine optimization is the joke that I like to use because it's literally like in the trailer.
All these things that you like
in the trailer. In the 2 minute trailer is the Iron Giant, which we both love, which is great.
Yep.
The DeLorean, which we both love, which is great. Freddy Krueger, which I love.
Okay.
I love, but I don't know about how you really feel about it. And that's just like
there's
scratching the surface. That's just in that trailer.
Okay, so that book. I could not get past 50 pages in that book because it's so poorly written. I really like the setup of it, and the whole everything about it is right down my alley. It feels like a 10th grader wrote it,
and
it's I could not with it. I just couldn't even like force myself to read it. I bought it twice.
I mean I felt the same way. I was trying to remember where I actually got my hands on a copy, and it was in a loot crate that I got like
okay.
a year and a half, like 2 years ago or something like that. I was like, how did I end up with that book?
I mean,
and
internet nerds,
I just wasn't into it.
They ejaculate to the thought of that book. My God.
And I mean, more power to you if you like the book. It's just, I mean,
I'm hopeful, as two
people who have extensively studied writing and,
you know,
and do writing.
It really pisses me off. I mean, I'm excited.
It was just
that
tough to watch.
Spielberg is
great.
Doing it.
Yeah. He's great.
I mean, it says it right here. I'm looking at the selling line. The line for this movie is, from cinematic game changer Steven Spielberg comes Ernest Cline's holy grail of pop culture.
Right.
I just want to be like, no, Ready Player One is not the holy grail of pop culture. Don't say that.
My favorite thing was your live reaction when Iron Giant showed up on screen and you're like, oh, okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
And then 2 seconds later, that text pops
like,
up.
Oh,
and you're
no,
going,
I'm
oh,
out.
No, I'm out now.
I can't do it.
That was really funny.
We watched the Lego Ninjago movie trailer.
Which looked funnier than
okay,
I thought I was going to
that's
look.
The third time I've seen a trailer for that movie, and every single time I get more invested in that movie. And when they announced that they were making a Ninjago movie, I was like, why?
I couldn't care less when they...
Why? But I've seen the Lego movie a couple times, and the Lego Batman movie was good.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping this is good. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, I'm excited for it.
I like Dave
That Franco. Was the first time I had ever seen a trailer for it, so...
It's the same Lego aesthetic.
Yeah.
Like the part where he asks his dad if he falls over... He's like, oh, is it bad? Is it bad? And his arm is popped off. He's like, on a scale from 1 to 10, it's a 7-point
arm ripped off or something like
yeah,
that. Yeah,
it's like,
it's really funny.
And then the last thing we watched was the DuckTales
clip. Yes.
And I don't really like the animation style of it very much. It seems pretty cheap, but man, I'm so in on that show.
The clip we watched was really funny.
Yeah.
Danny Pudi's great.
The Doctor is great.
The Doctor. Ben Schwartz is phenomenal.
Bobby Moynihan.
Yep.
I'm excited for that.
So in on that show. And plus the first sequence we'd see Launchpad McQuack.
Who's my dude. Other YouTube stuff I watched, I started Touch the Skyrim.
Yes. What do you think?
I'm only 3 episodes in, but
so you're in version 1.0.
Yeah.
So 1.0, 1.1, 1.2. Yeah.
There are some of the mods really make me laugh. Like the Tom's Tank Engine is the dragon.
Oh my god, that's reality.
Or the mod where Griffin changes the bow and arrow into a rifle. Or DMX music plays instead of the battle theme. Like, it's stupid.
It gets so buck wild going forward. It's the best.
I also watched a couple of videos from Comics Explained.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, it is what it sounds like. It's Comics Explained. Rob takes full story arcs. He has a 5-hour long recap of the Marvel Civil War.
Yeah.
It's just he goes over everything, all of the times and everything. It's crazy. But it's helpful when there are things that I don't know about comics or characters. His arc recaps are great for a reminder. If you're looking to get into comic books, or, you know, if you like some comic books, you don't read them all the time, or if you just want to expand your knowledge going in to see a Marvel movie or a DC movie, you could do a lot worse than Rob. He's a little colloquial for my taste. He doesn't write scripts anymore. His older videos, he would write scripts, but now he's releasing one or two a day, and he's like, I just can't write scripts that much, and I get it. That leads him to sort of repeat himself a little bit in videos. He, like, uses the same phrases over and over and over because he's just talking off the top of his head. But they're good videos.
He clearly knows. I've watched enough with you. I don't watch them on my own, really, but I watched enough with you. Like, this guy clearly knows his stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a channel that I really like.
And he keeps it interesting, like, which is, like, credit to him that he keeps even the longest videos engaging for the entire time you're watching
He has videos ranging from, like, 10 minutes to, like, 30 minutes.
And all the way up to 5 hours, as you said.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, that's a bunch of videos, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I got for YouTube.
I got a couple extra things. Giant Bomb's Super Mario Sunshine series, Steal My Sunshine Episode 2 came out surprisingly quickly. I thought it was going to be longer before it came out. Oh, man. This is it's a hilarious episode because they're past those first few easy shines to get to that are just, like, explaining the game, and they're into, like, the actual game now, but none of them have played it enough to really have the controls down. They're not used to the controls. I mean, it took Vinny the first 25 minutes of an episode to find the shine that he was looking for. Just to find it, not even to... He had to beat Petey Piranha, and it took 25 minutes just for him to find it. And the first time he found it, he thought he could leap down into the water by the people, and he leaped off and just died.
So,
anyway,
a lot of people
hilarious.
Don't like watching Jive Bomb videos because they're usually not great at the video games they're playing. That's not why I watch those videos. It has nothing to do with the quality of the gameplay. I'm not looking
for... I like the personalities.
Experts. Exactly.
I like
That's
them.
Why
they're
I watch Jive Bomb.
They're fun, and they have good banter back and forth, and they all seem to clearly enjoy working together. The funniest part of the episode, though, is remember those squid races that are terrible?
Yes.
And how there are three different
yes.
squids and they're all, like, different speeds and handling and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Abby at one point hops on one to attempt the race because I think it was Dan who had just failed it by, like, 0.2 seconds and missed the shine by, like, 0.2 seconds.
Right.
So Abby tried it. She hops on one of the squids and starts pulling out of the, like, dock. And Dan goes, oh, yeah, by the way, I think each of the squids it has, like, different speed ratings and things like that. And so Abby turns back around to try to go back to the dock and hop off and hop on another one, and she can't do that, so she just crashes into the dock and dies, and that was her turn. And she's like, God damn it, I thought you could switch! I'm like, it's like, nope.
Nope, sorry.
It's a really good series, and they literally ended up getting two shines in like an hour and 50-minute episode.
So bad.
Great. I love that. And then the other thing, I mean, I guess YouTube, based you and I both watched was a fan-made Bob's Burgers Archer crossover, which was awesome, and it was in the styling of Bob
Burgers
animation. It was done by this animator Simon Chong, who's clearly a really talented dude. He spent over 7 months animating this and also cutting together audio clips from
multiple episodes
of each show to form a somewhat coherent 4-minute story. You know, there's some hiccups with some of the audio clips and, you know, mixing in a little bit.
You can tell his forte is not sound editing.
But, I mean, I think all in all, it was really well done, and
yes.
I laughed at it a lot. And
if you're a fan of either of those shows, but especially both, I would give it a watch.
Yeah, and especially if, like, it's great if you've seen every episode of both shows, because I found myself being like,
oh,
I know what episode
one, yeah.
he took that Bob line and what episode he took that Archer line from to make them talk together.
Really, my favorite part, and it's at the very beginning, is the intro sequence. The title sequence is like a Bob's Burgers title sequence, but with the
with
Archer
with ISIS.
People. It's
yeah,
with
it's
ISIS.
So good.
So at the beginning of Bob's Burgers, they do grand opening, grand reopening, grand reopening, because everything keeps going. Like, the place catches on fire and rats come out and stuff.
Yeah.
So if you watch Archer, you know that they've been going through ISIS. Becomes this, it becomes that, and changes and changes and changes and becomes new things.
They go through Archer Vice, and then it becomes Cyril Figgis' agency.
So, like, they do that in the same style as Archer, or as Bob's Burgers, and it's fantastic.
And, you know, I never would have thought about doing that, and it was really cleverly done. It's just on YouTube. You should check it out. I think it's really good.
I guess the only other thing sort of related to that stuff is I only listened to one podcast this past week, and I listened to the first two episodes of The Adventure Zone.
Yeah. What do you think?
It's funny.
Yeah.
I've been listening to it when I fall asleep, so I've been having to go back and re-listen to certain things because, you know, I don't choose when I fall asleep when I'm listening to it.
I will tell you that as Griffin gets better as a dungeon master and starts really getting into the nitty-gritty of that story, it gets hard to actually fall asleep during that show. Like, I did the same thing. I started listening to it, you know, when I was back in LA for those couple of months, and, like, I would fall asleep to it during the first episode, like, during the first few episodes. And then it got to a point where I would just stay wide awake listening to that, because it gets so... The storytelling just gets so great, and it's so funny and fun to listen to.
Yeah.
I love The Adventure Zone. I'm sad that their first major campaign is about to end.
It's over.
There's one more part,
okay.
I believe.
I thought that
they're on part one of the
final. Part one of the finale. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. You listen to any podcasts?
You know, nothing different.
Cool.
Labim Bam, Cool Games Inc., Comedy Button, my usual.
Let's jump into some sports.
Sure.
Which is a new thing for us. Because over the summer, it's hard for us to watch sports because neither of us watch baseball religiously, and that's about it. And none of us watch MLS.
Oh, yeah, no.
I watched the USA Costa Rica soccer game.
Okay.
And for the first time in a long time, I was legitimately impressed with the tactics of the team and the players. Dempsey can still ball. He was the game changer in that game. It was great to see him at his old age still being able to play.
Was he 35?
34? I know he's in his
30s.
Let me look it up real quick.
He's still impressive. 34. Yeah, 34. Yeah, he's still...
And if
he plays like a lot younger player.
If he's going to be your super sub off the bench and play the last 20 minutes, because, I mean, he's not fat as fast as he once was and not in great shape. But, I mean, he is in great shape for his age. Don't get me wrong.
If he can give you 20 minutes and get some chances on goal every game.
I mean,
he played a sort of
holding midfielder role. Not a holding midfielder, a holding attacking midfielder. He played your false nine, basically.
Sure, yeah.
And it was great. For most of the weekend, we had the British Open on in the background, which was fun to watch. Spieth had a couple... He had two moments on Sunday that made me laugh. When he was messing around with the rules guys about the drop ball, and he was like... It took him 25 minutes to get all that sorted out.
Yep.
And then, like, 15 to 20 to 30 minutes later, he hit that 48-foot eagle putt, which was just so deflating.
For Cooch.
Yeah, for Cooch. It was just fun to watch.
I love Spieth. He's my favorite young golfer right now.
Well,
his brother
went to Brown with my sister.
Yep.
So
Stephen Spieth. Right?
My
yeah.
family loves the Spieths.
He's a pretty good ball player.
Yeah.
I was rooting for Spieth, but I love Matt Kuchar too, and he's kind of getting up there in age,
yeah.
and I really wanted to see
my
him
brother
win
wanted Kuchar
his
to win
first major, yeah, because he's just like I've been at a couple of like golf tournaments where I've seen him like walk past me and like interact with some of the younger fans, and he's just like
a good dude.
Spieth is too. Like, he's great. Like, I watched.
Oh, Spieth is on another stratosphere of popularity.
Yeah, but like at the Genesis Open that I was at a few months back with my friend Becky, like Spieth walked right past us, and we watched him just like take out like five balls out of his pocket and autograph them and hand them to these like five little boys that were just standing there like in awe, and I was like. He's like, he just finished a hole, and he's just like that concerned with
awesome.
Like making his fans happy. That's great. But Kuchar is the same way, and he always has been. And so I really wanted to see him win. But I think this was sort of finally getting over that, for Spieth getting over that mental meltdown he had a couple of years ago.
He has not been the same, or he had not been the same since that.
And for him to flub that drive at 13, have to take that unplayable lie drop, and then 20 minutes later hit his second shot, which he hit fat. Luckily, it took a really nice bounce into the fringe, and he was able to chip it on to get a good shot at a bogey putt and sink it. But for him to bounce back and end up winning by three strokes while Kuchar was still balling too.
Yeah, no, that was a really big moment for him in his career. Like, it's taken him years to rebound after such a colossal meltdown.
And also, he's only 23. He turns 24 this
week. We're not talking about that. It depresses me that he's so good. He's the child prodigy, basically.
He has fully taken over any hype of
Absolutely.
Rory McIlroy. Because Rory McIlroy... Sorry to my friend Becky if she's listening to this, because Rory's her dude. But I'm sorry, babe. Like,
well, you
Rory's
know what happened
done.
Is they released Rory McIlroy's PGA Tour, and that is legitimately one of the worst games I've ever played in my life.
And also, I think there's something to be said that... these rigorous weight-centric workouts that some of these guys are doing, stop doing that. It didn't work for Tiger Woods. It's not going
to
work for Rory.
Look and see what happened to Tiger Woods' body over the last decade and tell me you want to go do weight regimens as a golfer. What are you talking about?
Why are you doing military weight exercises?
You don't need to drive the ball 350, 400 yards. You need to work on your short game.
And also, I mean, half the PGA Tour courses are going to carry that ball 350. Anyway, whether you hit 300 or 350 out of the air, and then you'll have a short iron to the green anyway,
exactly.
Pretty much every par four. Like, what? You're not going to drive a 600-yard par
five.
That
trend will change. It'll go back.
Well, no one else is doing that. It's like, and you see what it's doing to Rory's game. He's like so inconsistent now.
Stupid.
Yeah.
But that's my sports.
I mean, I really only watched the Open this week.
You want to jump into music?
Yeah, I thought I had... Did we have any game stuff we wanted to talk about?
I was going
to
do that after music.
Okay, yeah. Music, there's a Thong Song remake.
Okay, that's great. We're not talking about the Thong Song.
What? I can't talk about the Thong Song remake?
No.
Like, I don't know why people are calling it a remake. It's just a remix, because it's not like
they re-recorded.
It's not like he did anything. I mean, he re-recorded it, can tell. It sounds like it's good quality. He did it with these Norwegian producers, Juicy... JCY. It's fine. It's like EDM light type stuff. I think the chorus sounds a lot better. It's a more understated chorus, but it's still the Thong Song. I mean, you get what you get.
Cool.
Ooh, that dress so scandalous.
Until you dye your hair white or blonde, you are not allowed to do any lyrical content from the Thong Song. You are not Cisco, sir.
Ugh. I want to be, though. Those Drew Hill gold records would look nice on my wall.
You just want to record a movie theme with Will Smith for Wild Wild West?
I actually don't want that. I mean, actually, I kind of do.
That's the best thing about that movie.
Oh, I mean, that's not hard, though. The best thing about that movie is the credits.
It samples Stevie Wonder, so.
Mm-hmm. I rediscovered a mixtape that I really like from 2015. It's The Neighborhood's Black and White.
Is it?
Then
our neighborhood is. It will be when you move in.
I hate you. Yeah, the neighborhood did a mixtape called Black and White, except it's stylized. Black and white are stylized as the hexagonal color codes.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of collaborations with rappers. Casey Veggies is on it. G Easy's on it. YG, French Montana. It's just different. It's different sounding for them. I've never been the biggest neighborhood fan.
I'm not either.
But this mixtape caught my attention back when it first came out, and I rediscovered it. I re-downloaded it because it was on my old laptop that I got rid of, and I forgot to send it on up to the old cloud. So I re-downloaded it and listened to it all the way through again. Yeah, it's really good, and it's free. You can just download it off I think I downloaded it off hotnewhiphop.com, and yeah, I really like that mixtape. But the reason I started listening to it is because I was thinking about the track that they have on that tape called I Can't Even, with a verse from French Montana, and I was listening to French Montana's new album, Jungle Rules, which you know what, man? I have to tell you, I was pleasantly surprised with that album.
Don't like French Montana.
I couldn't stand his debut. Couldn't stand his debut album at all. And frankly, his verse on the track he does with The Neighborhood is really whack and completely out of place based on the subject matter of that song.
I do have to say that hearing you say the word whack was weird.
Was it?
It was pretty whack of you.
Yeah, well,
continue.
Anyway, yeah, Jungle Rules, like so many hip-hop albums, is entirely too long. There's about 7 songs worth of filler on there, I would say. It's an 18-song album. And not like with like intermissions and skits and shit. It's literally 18 full-length songs. But there's a decent amount of good stuff on there. It's really well-produced. He clearly has realized that he doesn't know how to sing worth a damn at all, so he leaves most of his hooks up to his collaborators. So, like, he collabs with Travis Scott, Swae Lee from Ray Shremmerd. I always have trouble saying that.
Ray Shremmerd!
The Weeknd's on a track, which is great. Quavo's on a track. Future.
More rappers need to follow in French Montana's footsteps and stop singing.
Yeah, and on the tracks that he does sort of sing, it's really heavily auto-tuned to the fact.
Shocking.
Yeah, shocking, right?
That's amazing.
Hip-hop using auto-tune.
Lil Yachty?
Yeah, Lil Boat. But yeah, I mean, there's some really good stuff on there. I started listening to it yesterday just on a whim because I realized I hadn't listened to a lot of like new stuff that had dropped in the past week. So I checked it out. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really good. I would like to say that there is a hilarious song on this album that is unintentionally hilarious, and it's called Hotel Bathroom. And if you would permit me, I would like to read you the opening chorus from Hotel Bathroom.
I'm a little scared, but
all right.
Go for it.
Off top, baby. That's what he says to start.
Off top?
Off top. Like off the top of the head, probably?
No. Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
Like he knows that he needs to use the whole phrase to get it across, right?
Yeah. Hotel bathroom. Hotel bathroom. Smoking in the hotel bathroom. To the hotel bathroom. Hotel couch. Fucking on the hotel couch. Hotel bathroom. And then, yeah, I'll just leave it at that. And that's how that song starts off. Before there's even, like, it goes into, like, normal verses. But that's how that song starts.
I
was, like, in tears laughing so hard. Yes?
Could they not make it to the hotel bedroom?
Oh, well, that's if you want me to finish the chorus, then it goes, fuck you on the hotel bed.
There we go. Okay, I was wondering, because, you know, they wanted to fuck on the hotel couch, but they have a bed. Apparently, you would assume, unless it's a pull-out bed in the couch.
Heaven must feel so right, ain't gonna lie, I can't wait.
Okay,
which
that
doesn't even rhyme.
We're done.
Okay,
we're done.
Anyway, so I just wanted to give you a little indication of, and if you wanted to know, that is a song that has no collaborators on it. So
all French Montana all the time.
All French Montana all the time. Hotel Bathroom, check it out.
Is that all the music you got for me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I spent a couple hours looking at music this past week. Found a couple things on a whim that I want to mention. The new Goldfinger album, The Knife.
Right.
I'm kind of stunned at how much I like this. I mean, being in
the
90s...
I remember the last time I listened to Goldfinger, gosh.
Well, they haven't released an album in 9 years.
Okay,
and before that, they were... I mean, being a 90s kid, Goldfinger was a big thing for me when I was growing up. They were featured on Tony Hawk's Pro Skater soundtracks. Their cover of 99 Red Balloons
was
like
one of my
favorite songs in middle school.
I was in a Rocket Power movie.
So I saw that they released this, and I was like, okay, I'll give it a listen because, you know, why not? And this is not your old Goldfinger. This is not your father's Goldfinger.
Okay.
It's still John Feldman on the vocals, and some of the ska is still in there. But Goldfinger is pretty much a supergroup now because Mike Herrera of MXPX is on bass, Phil Snead of Story of the Year is on guitar, and Travis Barker of Blink 182 is on drums.
How did I not know this?
It was produced by Zach Cervini, who has done the last couple all-time low albums, 5 Seconds of Summer, Blink 182. And I think that it's a better album than recent albums by All Time Low, Blink 182. Mark Hoppus is also on a couple songs doing vocals.
Cool.
311 frontman Nick Hexum does some vocals. There's guest guitar from the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, Nate Albert, and drum work from 21 Pilots, Josh Dunn. Like, when I say it's a super group,
I like all of this.
Like, this is a super group.
That's awesome.
It's a ton of talented people who worked on this, and it's just the lyrical, it's summer California ska pop punk stuff.
That's awesome.
If you don't want to give the whole thing a listen, just listen to Put the Knife Away and A Million Miles for some radio ready pop punk stuff. It's light earworm California pop punk, and I'm okay with that. I wasn't expecting anything going to a new Goldfinger album, and I'm always happy for some driving and workout music.
Sure.
Everything doesn't have to be transcendent or heady or breaking barriers, especially when it comes to pop punk. A lot of the reviews are pissed about the album, or they think it's mediocre. They're like, this isn't the Goldfinger everyone loves and blah blah blah. I'm like, well, you know, they hadn't released an album in 9 years, so that's not shocking. And it's basically an entirely new band.
Right.
Except
for the frontman.
Yeah, I mean, John Feldman is doing vocals, but everyone else is not a part of the original lineup, so that's not surprising. And he's in his 50s. Like, you think he's really just going to do the same old,
right?
9 years after they release an album? I'm not surprised. I don't know why they were expecting the old Goldfinger with a whole new lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So people are mad, and they're like, well, it's just boring pop punk. I'm like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone who worked on it,
I'm all
does
it.
That.
I, you sold me on it. I can't wait to listen
to
it.
Yeah, I was really excited, and it's a fun listen. I've also been listening to the singles from Luke Christopher's upcoming album.
Okay.
The album is, I mean, you'd call it, it's a stupid music trend where you take out all the vowels of your anything, your song title, your album title, your band title, your...
Nice to Know You?
Okay, no, that's different. There's an O in there. This is Tomorrow Forever, but it's Tomorrow Fervor.
So, T-M-R-W-F-V...
V-R.
V-F-R-V-R?
Yeah.
Cool.
Anyways, this dude was tracked through high school by your boy Jimmy Iovine. He turned down going to USC to work on his music career. He worked on producing and songwriting with Usher and John Legend before he started releasing his own stuff. The singles are great. Like, it's reminds me sort of like, it's like Kyle, where he does singing.
So it's like hip-hop R&B? Like,
yeah, there's no guest. He has no guest people on anything. He does everything himself. So it's his singing and his rapping. So I like that a lot.
I always like it when I see that on someone's, like, you know, up and coming stuff. It means that they've had a lot of confidence instilled in their ability to run a song by themselves.
He's done everything.
Yeah.
It's great. It's good stuff. I like it a lot. Also, lastly, I want to present this with no comment, and I apologize for the language, but Tyga's new album is called Bitch, I'm the Shit Too.
Is this what you texted me about early this morning?
No, that's going to be later.
Oh, okay.
Else. We're not going to talk about that on here.
Oh, okay.
But I just love that it's Bitch, I'm the Shit Too. Because it sounds kind of like, if you took it out of context, it sounds kind of whiny. Like,
oh,
bitch,
yeah.
I'm the shit too. Like, hey, don't forget about me. It's like, well, yeah, everyone's forgetting about you, Tyga, because you're Tyga. And you're not very good.
Did you listen to any of the album?
Yes, I did. It's not good.
I listened to one song, and I actually liked it. It was the track with Quavo.
Yeah.
And now I don't remember what it's called, and I'm not going
to
spend
it. I like the production on it, but
yeah.
God, I can't listen to Tyga.
Well, Tyga's bad.
Anyways, that's music.
Yep.
Let's delve into some games.
All right.
Overwatch.
We played a crap ton of
Overwatch. It finally clicked.
It clicked with us, man. We played it literally the night we recorded the last episode complaining about how
we didn't like Overwatch.
We like Overwatch now. We ran a very nice tank healer combo and it worked. That kind of just wrecked a lot of people throughout the night.
We won like
night.
70 or 80% of our games that night.
Yeah.
So that was great.
I ran a lot of Bastion, and you ran pretty much all
Lucio.
And, man, it worked really well.
It's fun. I played some Mario Kart 7 on my 2DS.
Mm-hmm.
Still a fun game. It's Mario Kart. And I played a lot, like 15 hours of Stellaris.
Okay.
Which is what I want to play with you. I want to do some video content and just kind of do our own little...
Yeah, I'm not allowed to know about this game.
I don't
want to
tell you much about
it. I don't know anything about it.
It's sort of like a Civilization or Risk type game.
I kind of remember, like, vaguely skimming across a review, an IGN review of it, saying that it was kind of like a sort of real-time strategy type situation.
Dense.
Okay.
Oh, my God. And that's partly why I want to do it with you, because it's complicated and fun.
Cool.
I'm looking at doing some video content about that soon. So, I mean, that game has its hooks in me hard. It is a difficult game.
What are you playing it on?
On my computer.
Okay. Because I thought
Steam.
It was only a...
It's PC,
Mac
only. Mac
only type thing.
And
okay.
Linux, but yeah, it's
right.
A computer game. That's all I've got for games.
I played something that I've been really excited about since
Uh-oh.
It was announced. I started playing the new game from Game Grumps, Dream Daddy.
Oh, yeah, that's been big-time Steam seller.
Yeah, dude. I kind of am in love with it. It's so well stylized as, like, it's stylized as a Japanese, like, dating sim.
Yep.
I don't know if you... That's not really... I don't know if that's really your cup of tea or not, but...
I have one
I've
on
played,
my Steam account.
I've played a lot of them. I mean, it's some of my favorite stuff in the Persona games are,
yeah,
like, the dating
Persona.
Sim stuff and the relationship building. I played through freaking Hateful Boyfriend.
Hey man, if you play freaking BioWare games, you've done relationship simulations on a really base level.
Yeah, but, I mean, the setup for this game is you're a single dad with a teenage daughter who just moves into a new neighborhood, and you meet all of these... single hot dads,
whoop, whoop.
And you can date them.
Whoop, whoop. Hot daddies.
Yeah, hot dads. And, I mean,
sweet, sweet,
everything about this game is really well made, considering it's the first game that Game Grumps has produced. It's the first game that Vernon Shaw of Hot Pepper Gaming fame has co-created. And, I mean, the art's gorgeous. The music is phenomenal. The writing's both really sweet and really funny. It's got a great, like, father-daughter relationship in it, along with just an inane amount of dad jokes, which I, of course, am in love with.
I love dad jokes. Vinny Carabella.
Yep, dad jokes are great. My favorite part through the first, like, 3 hours or so has been you meet this one dad with, like, this overachieving 10-year-old daughter, and your daughter's with you. And you get into, like, this, like, back-and-forth, like, bragging match about, like, your daughter's accomplishments that... devolves into, or well, technically evolves into this like Pokemon Red or Blue style, like black and white mini game where you're fighting, quote unquote, fighting the other dad,
right,
using your daughter's accomplishments, and it's hilarious. Yeah, it's a really fun game. It's $14.99 on Steam. Like, I'm playing through it on my Mac. If you're into that kind of stuff, or even if you've never played something like it and just looking for, like, this is a really good, like, entry into this dating sim genre if you've never tried it out. And, you know, if you don't like it, you're only out $15, which is a pretty good price for how much content there is in that game.
I'll wait until it drops down in price, but yeah, I'm excited to play that at some point.
That's all I got.
All right. Last but not least, let's jump into what we've been reading the past week. And I'm really excited to talk about this.
Okay.
Because I'm about 80 pages into a new book that I started this week. And I have not been this effusive and in love with a book in over a decade, maybe. It's called The Gentleman in Moscow. It's written by Amor Towles. He was an investment professional for more than 2 decades, and I'm really mad about that because he's only written 2 books, and I need this dude to write more books, because A Gentleman in Moscow is amazing, and amazing is like the easiest word to use, but literally it is a book that makes me angry as a writer, because it is that good.
Oh, wow.
And okay. It's not, like, just pretentious good. It's witty. It is verbose and wordy, but in a way that is just... I don't even know what to say. Everyone who's listening to this, you need to buy this book. You need to read this book. It is the first time where I think that everyone should read this book. Even if it's not your type of book, you need to read this book. It is so good. I love it so much. Like, I was bugging Katie last night. We were in bed both reading, and I kept stopping her from reading her book to read her out loud. From my book. I was like, you need to listen to this. It's so good. Like, oh my God, that book's amazing. I'm so happy that I bought it on a whim. Just being like, yeah, oh, it's so good. Awesome. I don't know what else to say. I was really excited about that book. Read that book, A Gentleman in Moscow. It's great. I'll let you borrow it when I'm done with it.
Cool.
I read 30 issues of comic books this past week.
Holy tits.
I'm obviously not going to talk about all of them because that's insane. I'll mention that most of what I read was DC. And right now DC is basically murdering Marvel in quality.
Oh, wow.
Which is hard for me to say because I'm a Marvel dude. But DC is killing it.
They've come far from the New 52 fiasco then.
Yeah. Trinity, which is a book centering around Wonder Woman and Superman and Batman, is great. Teen Titans has been great, especially at the end of the Lazarus Contract over arc between Teen Titans, Titans, and Deathstroke. There was some serious repercussions for both Wally Wests, because there's two Wally Wests. Wally West, the black Wally West from the New 52, has been fired from the Teen Titans. The old Wally West, the redhead from pre-New 52...
Mm-hmm.
This is a complicated storyline, but eventually, at the end of it, they go back in time, and Damian Wayne, Robin, who is Batman's son, punches young Wally West in the chest, and since he punched him in the chest and stopped his heart from beating in the past, when they get back to the present, Wally West has a pacemaker, so he can't run. Is the Flash anymore because mm-hmm. he has a pacemaker in his chest. And eventually in this arc, Deathstroke, Slade Wilson, gets the Speed Force and, like, goes back in time and all this stuff. And he goes so fast that he sort of sees all of time at one, like, he sees everything at the same. It's kind of like the end of Interstellar, which I don't want to, it's not a spoiler, but, like, he sees everything happening that ever happened and ever will happen at once, all at once. And it changes everything in his head. Like, he goes from... He's like... You know about Deathstroke is he's a mercenary and he kills people, and that's what he does.
Yeah.
And now he's like, I can't do that anymore. I was wrong, like, all that stuff. So that was a really big, cool thing. Wonder Woman is probably... It's hard for me to say this is such a Bat fan, but she's probably the best character in DC. Like, her book right now is amazing. I read 3 issues of it. The annual and the Steve Trevor special that they released before the movie. And I even liked the little mini issue of Steve Trevor. And it follows the Odd Fellows from the movie, the mm-hmm. 3 guys who they run with. And it's just a cool little story. I read 2 issues of Batman. And Bruce Wayne's in a really weird place right now because part of DC Rebirth is... they're sort of explaining why the New 52 happened, and it turns out that Dr. Manhattan from The Watchmen sort of erased time to try and set things the way he wants them to be.
Yeah.
And in the Button miniseries between The Flash and Batman, I don't know if you know anything about Flashpoint, but in that multiverse version of the DC Universe... Bruce Wayne was the one who gets shot in the alley, and his parents don't. And it.
Oh, okay.
And Thomas Wayne becomes Batman, and Martha Wayne becomes the Joker.
Oh, and wow. That's
Thomas
awesome.
Wayne ends up killing his wife because, like,
yeah.
She's, like, mentally broken. And in the Button, the Flash and Bruce Wayne end up meeting that Thomas Wayne, and it's this hugely emotional moment because... Obviously, Bruce Wayne sees his Thomas Wayne die, and Thomas Wayne sees his son die, and, like, after 20 or 30 years, they're meeting each other. And Thomas Wayne is just devastated that his son is Batman. He's like, you should not be Batman. You should not let this be your life. You need to have a normal life. Get married. Have kids. All this stuff. Like, this is the stuff you should be living for.
Mm-hmm.
I had that. You need to have that experience. And it sort of shakes Bruce to his core. So in the past, these issues I read, he ends up... He's talking to this character, Gotham Girl, about what it's like to be a superhero. He's like, I'm not Batman because I like being Batman. I'm Batman because I am Batman. It's obviously something that he doesn't love doing. He's doing it because he feels he needs to do it. He is Batman. And Tom King is a great writer. And he ends up proposing to Selina Kyle and they get engaged. And it leads into this thing called the War of Jokes and Riddles. He's like, before he feels that he can get married to Selina Kyle, he needs to tell her about what happened during the War of Jokes and Riddles, which is something apparently that happened in the past. But it's going to be this huge turf war between the Riddler and the Joker. And the Joker's been gone, like, we haven't had this character in the new run. So
yeah.
That's really cool. I read All-Star Batman number 11, and this is the book that if you like Batman, you should read, even if you're not well-versed in anything that's happening. Because it feels like it's written by Scott Snyder, who wrote the New 52 run of Batman, which is great, and the Court of Owls and all that stuff. It's a part of DC Rebirth. It's in continuity, but it feels removed. So you can just kind of read it without any repercussions of anything that's happening. It's really cool. You should check it out. I like Red Hood and the Outlaws. I like the last issue of The Dark Knight 3. Which is the sequel series to Dark Knight Returns and Dark Knight Strikes Back.
Right.
Like, it's cool. It's not really... Frank Miller has a writer credit on it, but it's really Brian Azzarello who's writing it, who I like a lot. It was cool. I want to talk to you about this from Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. Their new Oracle guy. They have a new Oracle because Batgirl's not Oracle anymore because she can't walk again.
Yeah.
Which is weird. There's a weird moment that doesn't feel genuine about bipolar disorder. The new Oracle has bipolar disorder.
Okay.
He's bipolar, and he'd been off his meds. The only reason he was like working with a villain to like mess with the bat, like he was an insider for him, essentially, because the villain had like taken his medication and was like giving it to him if he would help him, sort of. And this is this weird reveal where the Birds of Prey, which is Batgirl, Black Canary, and Huntress are, like, interrogating him and torturing, like, hanging him over a building, like, typical superhero
sure.
stuff. And they find out that he has bipolar disorder, and it's just an immediate flip. Where they're like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, blah, 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 and all these, like, things. It doesn't feel earned. Like, they just immediately flip a switch.
Hmm.
And as someone who has psychological issues and, you know, sees a psychiatrist and takes medications, like, I understand the need for talking about these things.
Absolutely.
But it just didn't feel worth it. It felt forced. I don't know. Just thought that I'd bring that up. I don't know if it's hard to do in comics because you're not getting internal. I mean, you do get internals, but you only have so much real estate to work with in an issue.
Especially when it's not a character who's like the main focus.
Right.
Of
I mean,
comic.
He's the fourth. He's a tertiary character.
Right.
Like, he's like. He's an important character in the comic because he's their, like, Ned from Spider-Man Homecoming. I want to be the guy in the chair with the headset. He's that.
Yeah.
So he's an important character, but it didn't work.
You'd like to, I'd like to think that it's set up for a bigger dialogue about psychological disorder in comics,
yes.
which we need more of. I would hope that it's not just a one-off thing to get out of that.
No, they're going to bring it back. It comes back. I'm
That's
sure.
good.
And the last thing I wanted to talk about was Dark Days the Forge. Dark Days is the big DC crossover for this fall.
Okay.
And it's hard for me to recommend reading outside of diehard fans because there's like references to crazily underknown characters. Like, there are references to, like, 10 different characters that if you don't know anything about DC and, like, are entrenched in DC lore, you won't get. I mean, even when the most popular character that you reference in an issue is Plastic Man, then, like, you're really going after the diehard fans.
Right.
But wow, it is epic, and I can't wait for the event. And I don't want to spoil it, because if you end up reading the Dark Days crossover that's going to happen, it'll start with this. Whew! It is an issue. It's crazy good. Like, I was jonesing. Like, I need this now, kind of thing, which was really cool.
Nice.
But that's all that I've read this week. Read A Gentleman in Moscow. Get that book, people. Do it.
As far as fun stuff that I read that wasn't business documents and shit for work, I started rereading certain excerpts from Take Your Eye Off the Puck by Greg Wyshynski, editor-in-chief of the Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy blog. It's a hockey book that is all about detailing the game as you don't necessarily get to see it on television, because camera technology for networks that show hockey is just not great, and it's all about following the puck. And this book details a lot of the ins and outs of this sport that people don't really get to see on TV, a lot of things that are happening off the puck that set up things that happen on the puck, stuff that you get in a live setting that makes it so important for you to actually experience hockey live if you're going to enjoy it. Like, I've turned so many people on to the sport by taking them to games, and this book sort of helps you get a better understanding of what you're seeing. But I've just been rereading excerpts from it because it's a really well-written book. It's really funny, and there's just helpful tips as I gear up for spending all of August rewatching games from last season for film study purposes before the new season starts. So, yeah, Take Your Eye Off the Puck, Greg Wyshynski, check that out. And then I had my own sort of, like, post-mortem with Vice Sports. I read a lot of Vice Sports content because that is shut down officially to pivot to video.
Shocking.
I feel terrible for all the writers. There's a lot of great writers who lost their jobs because of this, and a lot of great writers in all of sports media that have lost their jobs over the past couple months, especially people who cover hockey. And Vice Sports was one of my favorite places to consume sports content, and yeah, I'm very sad to see them go. So I hope all those writers bounce back quickly. That's all I got.
Well, I hope you enjoyed another supersized episode of My Consumerist Week. Thanks for listening. Make sure to check out...
Should we even call it supersized? Because this is probably what it's going to be, dude.
Check us out at flyoverstate.org. All of our social media contacts are on there.
Yep.
Give us some feedback. Leave us a rate.
Tell us what you're consuming over the past week.
Yeah, I
want
to have conversations with you guys. Let me know what you've been up to. And that's all we've got.
Cool.
Thanks for listening.
Love you.
Talk to you guys later.